Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host, Brad Hurlbus. And tonight, we have on Dan Kors. Dan, welcome.
Hey, what's up, Brad?
Oh, you know, it's another night trying to get out of those winter blues, waiting for lakes to open up to get back on the water and get back into that springtime groove. Let's get to that point where winter's getting long.
Yeah, there you go. I miss summertime myself already. I either want summer or I want fall. I don't care about the spring and winter too much, but I want summer or fall.
Agreed. My wife is a big skier, so I wouldn't want to deprive her of winter, but like I could skip spring. Like we could just elongate summer and fall, keep winter short and just make a long summer and fall and skip spring. I'm good with that.
There you go.
So I like to start my show pretty similarly, because I just think it's a great way to get to learn a guest. I'm just curious, like, I know you're a big fan of the outdoors and different aspects of it. So I'm just wondering how you got into it. Did you get into that growing up? Was it a family tradition? Did you just kind of stumble into it yourself?
You know, I started at a pretty young age. I was about 7 or 8 years old. I started asking my father if he'd take me hunting, take me fishing, stuff like that. You know, I do a little bit of fishing already, you know, with my grandma and stuff, because at the time she didn't like to touch earthworms and night crawlers. So she'd have me dig them up and get her a bucket full, and then she'd let me go fishing with her. But then I really wanted to go with my dad and hang out with the men. So about 7 or 8, I started asking, you know, hey, can I go hunting with you and my uncles and so forth? And eventually he let me go. And the first time I went, I actually didn't have a firearm. He just let me go, right? He said he wasn't going to invest in boots and long johns or any hunting gear, nothing camouflage, until he knew I liked it, right? So sure. Here I was like 7, 8 years old out in the woods, and I had like, I don't know, like Spider-Man underwear on underneath some jeans or something, because he wouldn't buy me long johns, you know. And right. Anyway, though, it was about small game hunting then. And after he saw I was really interested in it, he started upgrading me with gear. And then I remember I was 9 years old, and at Christmas he bought me a shotgun. It was a single shot 410 shotgun. And I thought I was a top dog, and I was ready to go slaughter the world, you know.
That changed the game right there. That changed everything. Because now, I mean, a 410 shotgun, single shot, opens up a lot, especially for a kid, like squirrels, rabbits, all that's fair game. I mean.
That's right.
ducks. I mean, you can do ducks with a 410. I don't know if you did, but I mean, I know guys that do ducks with a 410. I mean, it opens up like everything. It really, other than deer, well, but I mean, it opens up like everything.
Yeah, actually, I tell you what. So before then, you know, everybody has a little pellet gun or BB gun or whatever. And I, you know, shot birds and squirrels and stuff around the house. And I grew up in the city, right? Not a big All city, right. but a city down south. I grew up in Mississippi, right? Jackson, Mississippi. And, you know, we had squirrels and stuff like anywhere in America, right? Everybody has squirrels. But when I got that shotgun, I was ready for the woods and the outdoors and, you know, the squirrels, the rabbits. You're exactly right. Dove, you know, upland birds like quail or anything. You know, we went after it all back then, right? And eventually, I actually even used that 410 deer hunting. But all right. I was shooting slugs, right? They made little sure. 410 slugs. And I never killed a deer with that shotgun. But to this day, my father still has that shotgun. It's not in the same shape it was when he gave it to me, but he still has it. But that just really excited me, got the juices flowing, and I never really stopped since then.
Nice. So you got your 4-ton shotgun chasing all the different critters you could. What did yep. you, what, where did you start to, where'd your passion start to go? Cause I mean, fall is short. We know that. We already said that. And mm-hmm. it's really hard to chase. Like I'm a bird hunter, like, but because I'm a bird hunter and because my dog's sitting back there behind me sleeping. I mean, I feel guilty when I'm out sitting in a tree stand. So we're all chasing birds. It's upland mm-hmm. birds in October. It's ducks in November, other than a quick 1 week break for me to go fill my freezer during gun deer season. So you can't, I had to choose and kind of figure out where my passion was. So I'm curious to know, as you grew up in this, like, where did your passion start to take you? Like, did you go towards big game? Did you go towards birds or small game? Or like, did you kind of like go back and forth? And was it like just a twisted road of like throughout the woods?
So probably for like up until I was about 12 or 13, we hunted and fished, right? We'd start with, you know, squirrel season in the early fall. We go into deer season, and then we finish with rabbit season, right? We'd be hunting like January, February after deer season. We'd be hunting rabbits with beagles. My dad, my uncle, a couple family friends, they all owned a few beagles, and we ran them as a pack, right? Like everybody had two or three beagles, and we'd have a blast. That's a lot of fun, right? But anyway, and once hunting season was over, you know, you get a little bit of break. And then we start fishing down south, right? Crappie, bluegill, mix in a little bass. And then eventually the summer would come and we kind of slow down in the summer. So that went on from like about the age of 8 to like about the age of 13. And then at 13, my father bought me a 20 gauge shotgun, right? So now we were able to step up a little bit more, right? So now I could shoot. I don't know if you're familiar with big game deer hunting down south, but in Mississippi, even to this day, they still run dogs, right? You can hunt deer with dogs.
So right? I know you can. I've never experienced it, but I'd love to. I definitely want to hear about that. Like, I want to dig in there. Like, I know we're on like a roll, but I really want to hear some, like, that's got to be different. Like, so like, how's that? Like, I've hunted with bear dogs. I've ran bear dogs in spring during but in like early fall for training. We've ran dogs. I've been on hog hunts where guys are running dogs. Like, I understand how like the hounds work and like the catch dog, like all of that. Like, I get, but I don't understand how it works for deer. Like,
with deer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the way it generally works is, the South is also popular for having clubs, right? And basically a club is like, you know, 10 guys or 5 guys or 20 guys, and you're all buddies, and you might chip in at least some property or whatever you're going to hunt, right? And the way it works is, you would say you have 10 guys, and you're going to, you know, surround this 40-acre plot, right? And there are deer all inside this plot, you suspect. So you line guys around each side, you kind of line the perimeter, And then you get one or two guys that work the dogs. We call them kind of like the dog man. And he's going to drive, just like they have man drives, you know, probably in Wisconsin and other places. It's going to be that one or two guys with the dogs, you know, say five, six dogs, whatever it is. And they're going to jump deer in the Jeep. They're going to bust deer out, and they're going to take whatever evacuation routes they can to elude this pressure. And you have these perimeter hunters that are the shooters. And basically, but you're spread out. Don't get me wrong. You're spread out. Like maybe you might be 100 yards to like a quarter mile, just depending on the terrain. And for safety reasons, the clubs I was always in, you use shotguns only. That's why my progression was, you know, eventually to like a 20 gauge shotgun as a 13-year-old boy. Right. And you're using buckshot because the distance and so forth like that. And you strategically place people to protect them for safety, but also give them opportunity to shoot these deer as the dogs run them out, you know? And it's a lot of fun, you know, but all the other hunting principles apply. You got to be quiet. You got to try not to move, because sometimes you may see deer that have been spooked, but the dogs aren't running those deer. So they're still moving through with all the senses that they have, and they're on high alert, right? So you're still trying to, you know, how we might hunt today when you're still hunting or spotting and stalking or tree stand hunting, whatever it is, you're going to be quiet and so forth. About the only thing that didn't matter back then was scent control. We had absolutely no scent control, right? But anyway, that's a whole nother story and rabbit hole. But anyway, I started doing that, and you know, you hear the hounds running and barking, and man, it is such an adrenaline rush, and you hear the deer coming long before they come. The only problem that I had with it is those deer are hauling tail. They are not, sure. If the dogs are on them, they are running full speed. You know, they might take a break and look back. And sometimes you don't know that the dogs are running that particular deer because they've distanced themselves from the dog so much, especially if you're using beagles or smaller hounds, right? You could use bigger hounds like walkers or blue ticks and black and tans and some of those things, but they almost push the deer too fast, right? The beagles kind of like push them just enough where you can get some decent shots, but the deer keeps a good distance. Maybe he might be 10, 15 minutes ahead of the dogs, you know. But anyway, that's how I started that. And that was so exciting. Eventually, I didn't want to fish. I didn't want to rabbit hunt. I only wanted to deer hunt. It was just such an adrenaline rush. And this, you know, the quarry is so big that it was just exciting to me.
That's awesome. Like that's super cool. Like, and I now it really clicks and makes sense, because you explained how it works. Like, it's more like, because I've been part of, like, deer drives are a long standing tradition in Wisconsin, and we do the same thing. We set up blockers, only we're not using dogs, we're using people. And it's normally the new people to the group that wind up, and like most of the time, like in all of the drives I was in, the drivers never had guns. The guys walking weren't allowed to carry a gun. It was just the guys that were posted up on the outside were the only ones for a safety standpoint.
Right.
So I completely, like, now it all clicks and I understand how you're actually using dogs.
Yeah, it's just like a drive except with dogs.
I get it. And we're able to use dogs in Wisconsin for tracking. So we can use tracking dogs, but they have to be on a leash. So completely different use of dogs.
Right, right. And
I'm not sure what it's like down south now, but we're not allowed to use buckshot either. Buckshot's illegal for deer hunting.
Right. I think you can still use it in Mississippi. I don't know about Texas. You know, quite honestly, I haven't hunted, you know, deer with a firearm in over 25 years. So
all right.
I don't always pay attention to all those rules. I primarily archery hunt now. Sure. So sometimes I feel like such an idiot because I don't follow all of the gun laws related to hunting. And then I was like, man, I have friends that rifle hunt or what have you. And it's like, Man, I wish I could tell you. I can look it up and figure it out for you, but I just don't know.
So that's, I mean, I guess we kind of alluded to where your passion ended up. I mean, so archery is what really lit the fire in you then.
Right, right. So as I became, say, like about 20 years old, right? I graduated college, moved back home, and I was working with some guys and at my job, you know, in my profession. And I found out that one of the guys was a bow hunter. And so I was like, oh man, that's intriguing. Tell me all about it. I was like, your season starts a little early, right? You know, because rifle season in Mississippi was like mid-November, late November, right?
How long?
You would go from like mid-November, right before Thanksgiving, through about like a little after, maybe a week into the new year, maybe a week into January, something like that.
And I'm always curious because it seems like a lot of states have far longer gun seasons. Like in Wisconsin here, we get a 10-day firearm season. So that starts the weekend before Thanksgiving and ends the Sunday of Thanksgiving. We roll into then a 7-day muzzleloader season. And then if you're not in a metro area or an area where you can shoot does, you're done. Your gun season is done. But if you are in like a doe area, then we have some antlerless only specific hunts. So there's one like that rolls right after muzzleloader. And then we have a holiday one for the same thing. But if you're not in an area where it's authorized, I mean, if you're in Northwoods of Wisconsin, you get 10 days with a rifle and you get 7 days with a muzzleloader and you're done. Like,
yeah. So that time from mid-November through January, there's like maybe a 2 week with dogs, then like 1 week.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
And that's buck only, let's say. And then you might get a weekend that's does, and then no dogs for another week. Then you get a muzzleloader thrown in there, and then you go back to rifle and shotgun again, you know. So it kind of, it's kind of in and out, but the overall range is like mid-November to January, a little after January.
Got it.
And so anyway, I met this guy at work, and he was telling me he was a bow hunter, and I was like, really? And I'm thinking it's the most difficult thing in the world, right? So I was like, man, how many deer did you kill with your bow last year then? And he said, oh, about 30. I was like, 30? I was like, what are you talking about? He said, yeah. I was like, how did you kill 30 deer with a bow? And he's like, man. So at the time, this is probably 1995, maybe 4 or 5. He says, well, I get like $3 and unlimited does. Like you could kill unlimited does. And he said, so archery started, you know, October 1st or thereabout. He said, man, I go sit in the persimmon tree every day after work. I get off at 3 o'clock. I can be in the tree by 4 o'clock. Now I'll sit there until it gets dark and get 3 or 4 does, shoot one, they run off. 30 minutes later, some more come back, I shoot another. I said, what are you doing with all this meat? He said, oh man, I give it to the church, family, friends, you know. He's like, I just enjoy being out there. So if you do that 2 or 3 days a week and you do it for like 6 weeks, you can kind of get there, you know. And I was like, oh man. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, I could have a lot of fun. I could start hunting so much earlier. So I bought a bow. I bought my first bow off another guy that worked with us. And the first guy that killed all the deer, he got me set up. He had like a bow press. He had all this stuff at home in his garage. And all of that was foreign to me, right? I was like,
sure,
what in the world? And he got me set up. And he, once he finished, he kind of showed me how to shoot and blah, blah, blah. And he says, go to the bow shop and ask to speak to this guy, so-and-so. And he said, tell him I sent you over there and have him to paper tune your bow, right? I said, okay, whatever that means, right? So I go there. The guy's name was Kenneth. He said, tell Kenneth that I sent you. This guy's name, Joe. Tell Kenneth that Joe sent you. So I go there. I see Kenneth. And Kenneth says, oh, yeah, I know Joe. You work with Joe? I was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, man, this is a pretty good bow. This bow looks familiar. And then I was like, really? He said, yeah, I used to have one just like it. He said, matter of fact, I sold it to a guy named Skipper that works with Joe. And I was like, really? I said, that's who I bought this bow from, was Skipper. That's his nickname. And he said, I bought this from Skipper. He said, man, this is my old bow. So the bow tech at the shop, I have his bow now. I'm saying, hey, check it out. So he shoots it through the paper. He's like, man, I can't. And this is back before, you know, they weren't shimming the cams or doing anything like that, right? So it was like you adjust the timing on the bow by tightening your limb bolts and measuring the tiller, you know, at between the limb pocket and the string at the top and the limb pocket and the string at the bottom. You want those dimensions about the same. It was real weird back then, right? So he said, man, this is as close as I could get it. He gave it to me. Man, I practice all the time. Practice, practice, practice. And I had gotten some arrows made there. I shot so much that, like, by the time October 1st came, I only had, like, five arrows that had veins on. Or back then I was shooting feathers. I had wore the feathers off and lost arrows and all of this stuff. I was like, man, can I hunt with, like, five arrows or whatever? So anyhow, I had gone scouting on my club property, right? And nobody in my club bow hunted. I knew one or two guys that had bows, but they never talked about bow hunting. So I go, I'm doing some scouting. October 1st comes. I bought a tree stand, a climbing stand. I go in this one spot I scouted. I was so stupid. I got up the tree and I hadn't adjusted the stand right. So I was leaning way down. Once I got up in the tree, I was like, man, this feels like I'm gonna fall out of here. And then, so I didn't see anything. So that went that day. I go back a week later. I say, I'm gonna try this other spot I scouted. And, you know, honestly, these woods that I always hunted in November, they look completely different in October with all the vegetation. That's right.
A lot of green. Oh, I'm fully familiar. Like from like grouse hunting, we start in September. And there's a lot of leaves. Like you only hear them. And then it's not until October when them leaves drop that you start seeing them. So I know exactly what, like a lot of leaves, it looks completely different.
Completely different. Right. And then keep in mind, I'd only hunted like with like drives, right? Dog drives. So usually I was a perimeter guy, especially when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, you're a perimeter guy. You're not the guy guiding the dogs and running the dogs and so forth, because they respond to a certain person more than everybody else. So anyway, it was kind of difficult to navigate the woods because I'd always been a perimeter guy. You go down a trail and when you get to a big oak tree, you walk into the woods, you know, 50 yards, and that's where you are on that ridge point, you know, or what have you. And so anyway, I get there the second time bow hunting and I climb a tree in a spot I had picked out, just a trail, you know, and I'd seen some deer sign there. So I'm sitting there maybe an hour and here comes a doe and a fawn. And I was like, oh my God, there's a deer, right? And I ended up killing that deer. I'll make the story short, but I shot that doe and I debated about it because I was like, well, that's a fawn with her. It's like, should I shoot this mother? Should I not? Right. And when I saw the fawn grazing, you know, or browsing or what have you, I was like, well, she appears to be weaned, you know, so I think she can survive without the mother. So anyway, I shot that doe, didn't get much of a blood trail, man. I looked and looked and looked for this deer. And I just, in my mind, I'm thinking, where do I think this deer went? So I go downhill, get to like a creek bottom, and then I'm following this, you know, the bottom of this ravine, right, for a while. And I finally say, you know what? I don't think this is going to happen. I'm going to go back to the truck. And then something said, well, Dan, just go 50 more yards. Man, I walked 10 yards and there she was laying there. I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe this.
Wow.
And I was like, well, now I got to get her out of here. You know, and I was by myself because I had nobody bow hunted. So I was there by myself. Sure. And anyway, but I was hooked then. I was like, man, I've only been bow hunting twice and killed a deer. It's like, this is the way to go. And so eventually all the guys in my club, they hear about this and they would call me Junior, right? They say, well, man, Junior killed a deer back in October, you know, blah, blah, blah. So now they were like, well, we don't want you to be just a perimeter guy. We want you to put all the perimeter guys in the right spot, because now you have, it's like I graduated to a different level to be able to, I was like the guide, you know, I was basically the hunting guide for our club. And so I was like, man, this is what a turn this is taking. You know, when I was a little kid, just, you know, nose running, couldn't keep still. And now all of a sudden I'm guiding all these guys to make sure they're in the right spot. And, but I found out my passion was still just archery, because I enjoyed how quiet, how calm the woods were. You know, I mean, I enjoyed the dogs. Don't get me wrong. The dogs and the firearms going off, but it's something special about just watching the woods wake up, hearing the animals get busy, the birds, the squirrels. And then even if you don't see an animal, just the solitude, that really just resonated with me.
And I feel like it takes a certain kind of person for like to really be able to enjoy that solitude. Like, I'm too antsy, I'm too fidgety. Like, to sit in a tree stand, like my mind just goes like to work instantly. And like, I can't stop thinking about work. Whereas like when I'm chasing my dog around the woods or something like that, all I focus on is her. I just focus on the hunt and I forget about everything. Or when I'm in my kayak fishing, same thing. Like, I'm able to just dial in and focus on the task at hand. Like, and that's where I really get my stress relief from. But there's something with like sitting in a tree stand where it's like, I can't shut my brain off and just focus on like, and just slow it down and just focus on like the squirrel or like the sun coming. Like, I love a sunrise in the woods, don't get me wrong. But like, after that goes from that magical orange to like the sun's up, it's like,
it's different. Man,
It's different. Now I'm back like into work mode, thinking about things I got to do. I'm like, I just can't shut that off. So like, it takes a special kind of person to really be able to enjoy that solitude.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you're 100% right. And the other part about the sunrise and sunset is like, those are like the golden hour, right? So you're heightened with anticipation, your senses on high alert. And then all that time in between, you know, dawn and dusk, you're like, you know, let me get my phone out. Let me, you know, it changes in a heartbeat. You know, the only time it isn't that way is during the rut. Then I can, you know, stay a little more energized, a little more focused, but that's still exhausting at that point.
What time? So you're mainly hunting Texas now, you said, right? I believe is your
main focus? I live in Texas. In Texas. So I moved from Mississippi to Pennsylvania. Right. And I lived in Pennsylvania for a few years and I bow hunted there, you know, public land in Pennsylvania. It was a little different. Mississippi didn't have a lot of public land, just some, but anyway, so I hunted there a few years. Then I moved to Texas about 20 years ago, and Texas is full of private, right? And right. So when I moved to Texas, it was like, guys were telling me, oh yeah, I got a lease and I paid this and that. And I was like, you pay how much? You know, I was like, are you insane? I was like, I paid for a lease, you know, in Mississippi, but it was like, you know, you can give the farmer or the landowner like $500 and three deer and you're splitting that between 10 guys, you know? So it's like,
Sure.
You know, I'm not taking out a second mortgage to you know, hunt a lease in Texas, right? So, you know, life kind of went a little different direction for me for a little while. You know, I was raising a family and all this stuff. And eventually I decided, you know what? I got to break down and start hunting again, you know? So I took about, you know, maybe 15 years off as my kids were growing up and getting them to college. And anyway, as soon as they got on their own pretty much, and I didn't have to take them to ball games or coach or do any of this stuff, I was like back in the woods, right back into it. And then, so I bit the bullet and I got a lease in Texas, right? And then I had a friend that got married, and he married into a family that had some land in Oklahoma. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Dallas area, but Oklahoma is like about 50 minutes away, 45, 50 All minutes right. away, and I can be in Oklahoma. So they lived in Oklahoma. So the last maybe 2-3 years, I've hunted exclusively in Oklahoma. So I was hunting both for a while, Texas and Oklahoma, but now I just hunt exclusively in Oklahoma because there's not a lot of places around Dallas. And so I would have to drive, you know, 3 hours away to go hunting. And it's like, if I'm going to go that far for, you know, I'm going to make a whole weekend of it, right? So I would go and do that. And I was like, man, by the time I do that, I could drive an hour and a half to Oklahoma, even with the non-resident tags or license, I'd come out even. I was like, yeah, I'll just do that, right? And it was less pressure, more animals, you know, better property, all of this. So now I kind of pretty much exclusively hunt Oklahoma when I'm not. Now, I'll go hunt with some friends in Texas. Don't get me wrong. Last year was the first year I didn't have a Texas license in like the last maybe 5 or 6 years. Or if we have draw hunts in Texas, I'll do those. I went to Colorado last year on a mule deer hunt.
Nice.
A couple years back, I did antelope in Colorado. So, I mean, I don't hunt just whitetail in Oklahoma, but that's primarily what I do.
So when is the rut in Oklahoma then? That's the whole reason why I said, like, so you're in Texas. I was curious to when the rut starts, because we were talking about the rut. Yeah.
You know, it's weird, right? I would say the rut there is, peak rut is late October, like the last week of October to me. You know, that's when I see most of the rut activity. But believe it or not, I shot my buck this past year on October 1st and opening day. And that buck came in. I had no knowledge of this buck. And there were some does. I was hunting a spot pretty much almost guaranteed to see a doe there, right? I was just, hey, let's get some meat in the freezer. Let's knock the rust off and get going, right? So, I go to this spot and these does are coming in. I'm totally prepared to take one of these does, and then they're starting acting kind of funny. They're looking back behind them, and here comes a buck, right? And this buck, he kind of had pre-rut behavior, and I was like, wait a minute, this is October 1st. You know, and the does were like squeamish about him, and then one goes over and lays some scent down, and he goes over and checks that. And then I was like, yeah, this is October 1st. Am I seeing this right? You know? And eventually I got a shot on him and took the shot.
That's awesome. I mean, so what was the feeling of taking, like, I don't know how many buck tags you get. So like for me, I get one for archery in Wisconsin. I get one buck. That's it when it comes to archery in Wisconsin. So I've never taken my buck on the first day of hunting. And I don't know how I would feel about that, to be honest.
Yeah. 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 Honestly, I wasn't crazy about it. And I tried to pass, right? I gave myself every reason to pass until I got a really good look at him. And I was like, man, this is a decent deer. So anyway, I get with archery in Oklahoma, I get two bucks, right?
All right.
$2 and four does.
So in Texas, it wasn't like your season was over then. Like you don't shoot that buck and it's like, man, I got nothing to chase in October. Like I got nothing to chase in the rut now. Like this, like that's where my mind would go. Like, and I wouldn't pass a shooter the first day. Don't get like I wouldn't do it. But like
right.
I'm happy I got a bird dog though. I could go chase bird. Like I got backup plans, but if my first prime thing was archery, and that's what drove me, man, I'd have a hard time doing it. Cause what do I do the rest of the year?
I know, right? Yeah. And fortunately for me on this property, you know, I probably need to take some does, right? I'm not the only one that hunts there, the family hunts there. And we probably need to take some does. So I didn't feel like my season was over. And particularly because I had another tag in my pocket, right? I had another tag in my pocket. I felt okay about it. Now, in Texas, you know, in most places in Texas, it's a little bit different. You get $2, but only one can be, one has to be greater than a 13 or 14 inch spread, right? Inside spread. And it has to have, you know, branched antlers, right? So you kind of, I kind of look at it like you kind of get a spike and you get a big buck. You get a big buck and you get a spike, right? And so,
can you take most two big ones? Texas.
No, you, Texas, get, you can't you... get you can't get two big ones unless they're in, in most cases unless they're in different counties.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So if you have a lease, unless your lease is on the county line, you know, and it straddles the county line, then you're probably going to get $1. Some of the counties, especially down South Texas, you may get $2 or $3. It just depends, right, on how the game biologist set up the tags for that area. But at any rate, so I'd always been, like you're saying, very skeptical about taking that buck early because you can miss out. Although in Texas, Texas has a long firearm season too, though. Oklahoma has a short firearm season. So that's another reason I prefer Oklahoma. Then I'm probably giving this away, and now we're going to get all kind of pressure in Oklahoma. But anyway, Texas has a long firearm season. People like bow hunting here, but if you say the first Saturday in November is firearm and it goes to the first Saturday in January, that's a long time for firearm, you know.
That's a very long season.
Right, right. And then so, you know, the whole reason I got into archery, if you go back, was because I was going to get this early opportunity. It was going to be early and often. And then, you know, up until mid to late November. And now you come to Texas. And Texas is almost the opposite. You get that first of November to the first, you get 5 weeks. It's actually 5 weeks before for archery season, archery only. And then you can keep going, but you're going to have firearms everywhere, right? So it's a little bit different. That's why I prefer Oklahoma now.
That makes sense. And Wisconsin, we have a pretty big archery season. So it starts, I think it's the second to last Saturday-ish in September. It starts late September. Mm-hmm. And it's archery. There's a youth hunt in there, which is a 3-day or 2 or 4-day youth hunt. I don't remember how much it is, which they're allowed to use a rifle. But other than that, it's basically end of September all the way through that first Saturday before Thanksgiving is archery only. There is no firearm season. But after you get to that opening a gun season for us, depending on where you are, I mean, it could basically be a gun season all the way then until January 1st. Like if you're in a metro area with all those other doe hunts and everything else, there's little tiny blocks here and there which are closed and you go back to archery only. But for the most part, you pretty much go through a gun season then from the end of November through the end of December. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing, like you can still use your archery tag, but you have to wear blaze orange requirements, but you can still archery hunt. We don't close it. The cool thing though, like we've got public land and like by our metro areas, and our metro areas go through like the end of January. Like once the gun closes at that December 31st, January 1st, our metro goes until like January 31st.
Wow.
So we get a whole nother, only in metro areas, only like metropolitan, like, and like But with some of how those lines are, like, it gets farmland. Like, it's not like you're not hunting in the city anymore. Like, those metro lines push far enough out that it's farmland. And you can hunt, if the weather's good, you can hunt the whole month of January with your bow still.
Wow. Yeah, here in Texas and Oklahoma, about mid-January, January 15th, around there, the archery season ends. There's a late archery season, or it goes through January 15th, and that ends. There's also, in Texas, there's a late youth season that's like the after the first week of January. You get about two more weeks to mid-January, and that's youth only. You can still hunt with your bow, but it's spikes and does only at that point in Texas. Oklahoma is, you know, no archery restriction. I mean, no antler restrictions, October 1st to January 15th.
Same. We don't have any. Well, the only antler restriction we have is if it's less than 3 inches, it's considered antlerless. That's our only restriction.
Yeah. Yeah. We have that in Oklahoma too. Yeah. If it's, I think it's 2 or 3 inches. If it's under that, it's considered antlerless. Right.
Yep. So that's the only restriction we have. But I'll be honest, I can think of maybe a couple of times I've ever sat in January. It can be pretty darn cold up here in January. And when it's got a high of 0 degrees, that is not nearly active enough for me to sit there with a bow, like degrees and windy. Absolutely. No. I'll go ice fishing then and sit in my shanty with a heater.
Yeah. As much as it's funny you say that, as much as I love the fall and archery hunting and deer hunting, man, I do not like the cold. If I'll go when it's cold, I'll go when it's rainy. That won't bother me. But this year I did appreciate that October 1st kill, you know, because I didn't have to deal with any bad weather. You know, I can become a fair weather hunter once that happens, you know. But ironically, I shot a buck on October 1st and I shot a doe on October 22nd. And it was 85 degrees on both days. I was like, man, it was well into November before we got, you know, below say 65 as a high.
Sure. And like, to me, that's like, those temperatures in October are crazy. I mean, but my October can be so hit or miss. So I do a grouse camp pretty much consistently the third weekend of October. Maybe it's a weekend before, maybe it's a weekend, but pretty much over the past 12 years now, it's been pretty much that same weekend. I've had everything from mid 80s and sunny and just like, holy cow, it's hot, to highs in the teens, lows in the single digits and snow. Like, the roller coaster is out of control. Like, and I never realized it, like, growing up, I never realized how up and down it is. But when you start having an event the same time every year and you start thinking back and you're like, man, we had blizzard conditions one year. Like, we're out there duck hunting and it's blizzard conditions. You can't see 10 yards in front of you. And all of a sudden, ducks splash down in front of you. You're like, what? And it's so cold. Where'd
he come from? Yeah.
Right. We shot one and it's so cold. I've got my lab wrapped up in my jacket because he's shivering. He can't stay warm. And like, he's like, bird. I'm like, stay. I wouldn't even let him retrieve it. I went and walked out there myself because there's no way I was getting him wet from one bird. It was so cold. Yeah, the very next year, it was in the 80s.
Oh my God. Same time of the year?
Same time of the year, same weekend. That was the second weekend of October, both times, back-to-back years. And the other, like, it was so crazy. It blew my mind. So where we were that first year, our water table super low. So one of, like, the flowages we were hunting, we were standing what is technically 15 feet underwater. We were, like, back down to the river channel. Mm. So we've got, like, we're super, like, 10 to 15 feet below on this flowage. Blizzard conditions. The very next year, 80s, and that flowage is totally over full, and we're hunting on shore in 4 feet of water. Like, wow. So crazy. It was like black. It was like black and white, like yin and yang. It was just like completely opposites. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Like, thinking about it then, like, it blew our mind. But looking back now, I've never seen such a drastic change between 2 years at the same weekend.
Yeah, I you know what, you're talking about duck hunting, I bought a shotgun let's see, what's this, 23 now. I bought a shotgun, a new shotgun in 21, and I told myself, man, I'm going to go duck hunting. I'm going to go bird hunting. I'm going to do all of this stuff. And honestly, that year was a bad year for ducks. I think that was the year we had, it was pretty warm and the ducks didn't really push down that much that year. But anyway, I told myself I was going to start duck hunting. I just want to do a little bit. I don't want to, I don't need another like hobby that I'm, oh, I have this obsessive compulsive personality. I don't need to get that deep. I just want to get in the water, go once, twice, get a couple ducks and I'm good. You know?
Sure. Sure. I get that. I mean, it's a rabbit hole. Like you start going down those rabbit holes. And I did that like 3 years ago. Cause I was bored in the wintertime. Let's try predator hunting. Holy cow. Now I've got thermal. I've got night vision. It's like, what am I doing? I don't need another hobby that costs thousands of dollars. Like, this is crazy. Like you got to narrow, you got to shrink your window. Like you got to focus here, Brad.
If I had that many hobbies, I wouldn't be able to afford a divorce, you know, because my wife is going to surely leave me. I wouldn't be able to afford that. I have all my money tied up in the hobbies.
Just don't tell her what you paid, right?
You're right.
Don't let her sell it for what you told her you paid.
That's right.
So for archery, I know like that's so did you ever dabble like in traditional archery? Are you a compound bow kind of guy? I'm just curious, like where's your, because archery has been your passion and you wanted to get into those woods. Could you ever like think like, I want to try a longbow or a recurve, or have you been a compound bow guy mainly?
I've been a compound guy the whole time, right? But I feel like I really do want to try a recurve. And I don't know. I feel like I haven't graduated to that yet, only because, and I don't know, I may be going the wrong direction, because I still, you know, I still want to kill a couple of big game animals, you know, I still want to go get a mule deer, still want to get an elk, you know, and I feel like I don't need the pressure of trying to learn to shoot a recurve and then still have those kind of on my list to hang on the wall, you know, so I've been strictly a compound guy. And then, you know, of course, all of archery is a rabbit hole too, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I started tinkering and I got a bow press and doing all this stuff. And, you know, I've always, you know, fletched my own arrows and everything. Ever since that first year when I went to the woods and I had like 4 or 5 arrows, ever since then, I went back to the bow shop. I was like, hey, I need some more arrows. And they were like, well, it's going to take, you know, 4 weeks to get them. I was like, 4 weeks? I was like, the guy did them in like 20 minutes or something last time. He's like, yeah, we got all these orders. So from that point on, after the very first year, I started fletching my own arrows just because, like, I can't be beholden to this. Anyway, over all the years, now I'm doing some of my own, most of my own tuning, my string changes, all of that stuff. It's and I think that's what I like about it. You know, even in the off season, you get these cerebral aspects that kind of drive, you know, my nature, which is kind of that of an engineer. I think I told you I was an engineer by schooling. There's always something to tweak with, you know, and
sure,
all of hunting can be that way. You know, you can be reloading, you can be doing all kinds of stuff, right? You can be training dogs in off season,
right?
Whatever that is, you could just an endless rabbit hole, right? But for the most part, I've been a compound guy.
All right. So what was it like starting to take on, like, how did you get into tuning? You fletching arrows. I know a lot of guys do that, but a lot of guys don't make that step into buying a bow press and learning how to tune a bow. I don't know how. I've never used a bow press in my life. The club I used to shoot at had one. I'm like, I don't know how to use this thing. So I never did. Like, I never taught myself. Yeah. It was like, eh. Like, I'm sure I could figure it out. I just never did. So, like, what made you drive to that step? Was it just like that, a pursuit of trying to have perfection on your bow? Or is it the engineer and you just like, I want to break this apart and learn it?
Well, a little bit of both. Here's what really drove me that way, though, right? So I have a friend who he was actually one of my kind of first sponsors, right? he ran an archery team, owned an archery team in an archery supply house, and he was my bow tech, right? And okay. I would take him my bow, and he'd say, "All right, man, just leave it with me, and I'll get it to you in a couple of weeks." And I'm thinking, a couple of weeks, man, when I go to the bow shop, you can, you know, peel around and look around the shop, and a half hour later, the guy's giving your bow back. Why do you need it so long? He's like, "Well, I'm gonna give it the white glove treatment." I was like, what are you talking about? So, man, this guy, he'd do all this walk back tuning, all of this stuff. He'd shoot it a lot and, you know, get familiar with it and tweak it and make it, man. And when he gave it back to me, he was right. It was absolutely, like, perfect. And I was like, wow. I was like, I never get this from the bow shop, right?
Sure.
So I said, I was like, but my buddy Troy, he's not going to always be available. I mean, he works. He has a couple businesses, you know, he shoots, you know, all this other stuff. I was like, I think the only way I can do this is if I start doing it myself, then I'm not beholden to the backlog at the bow shop, the guy rushing to get my, you know, get on to the next customer and any of that, right? I'm not beholden to Troy being tied up with all his endeavors. The only way I can do this is if I started doing it myself. And ironically, he actually taught a bow technician class. So I took his class, and then I got a bow press. Then I worked up the courage to work on my own bow, because it's still like, man, my bow's under warranty. I don't want to tear this thing up or do something wrong. So I bought an older bow. And I said, well, I don't care if I mess this up, but I didn't mess it up. So, you know, YouTube, calling Troy. Hey, Troy, how do you do this? Call another couple of technician friends I have. And before you know it, I was working on them myself. And I'm like, man, I can do it anytime. It's like, oh, man, that peep's not quite right. Let me put it in the press, move this peep around, and, you know, and then just go from there.
Makes sense. Like that seems like a really, like, easy, like, it's nice that the buddy that tuned your bow for you is like, hey, I also offer a class.
Right. I mean, he taught this class to, like, technicians at big box stores. He'd go around the country. Okay. He was teaching through COVID. I think he would have people take COVID tests, and they come in town, take COVID tests, and he might do small size classes. That was a really, you know, major part of his business model. And he was great. It was a great class. I'd take it again just to make just like a refresher, you know. But sure. he's still around, and I every now and then I'll give him a call and say, hey, I got this problem. What do you think of this? He's like, before you start shimming it, try this, you know. And then I was like, okay, sure. You know.
That's awesome. That's a good way to get into it when you got like someone like that support. I mean, that's completely different than trying to like learn off of YouTube or something like that. Having a mentor,
right,
in any of the outdoor stuff like this really is huge to me. Like, I do a lot with mentoring new hunters for bird hunting and things like that, and being able to like cut that learning curve down so they get excited and want to follow, like, and be there more and be out there and be present is such a huge thing. And YouTube's great, and there's a ton of informational videos out there. But having that mentor or like taking a class, like, that's like a different type of experience.
Right. Especially because it's hands on. Right. He had bow presses at the class. He had some, you know, some bows that we could practice. We were working with in teams, like, you know, everybody in this class had a partner. So two people go over there. You're going to press this bow. You're going to pop an axle out, whatever you're going to do to it. You know, I want you to put some twist in the string, see how the bow responds after that, twist it back. You know, we were doing all of that stuff in the class.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was like great. So it wasn't like you're just watch YouTube and then you're in your shop and you're working on it and then you don't know if you did something right or, you know, or whatever you're going to get yourself into and can't get out of it, you know, ruin a nice bow or something like that. So it was great having him around to help me with that.
That's awesome. Like, it's always interested me. And at some point, if I ever get back into archery hunting, which might be sooner than later, we'll find, like, all my listeners know this, but I rescued my dog at 6 years old. We've done a lot with her. She's a great bird dog, but she's still dog aggressive. So I'm not bringing another dog into my household because she is aggressive towards other dogs. So she's 11 now. And depending on how she goes, there might be a couple of years where she's retired and no longer can really hunt to the level I want her to.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get another dog because it's not fair to her. Like, I'm not going to put her in that stressful situation. So I think that's kind of will be that transition for me, is if I wind up with her needing to be retired, can't really bring another dog. And I think that's probably when I'll get back into archery, because at that point, mm-hmm. like, I'm not going to feel guilty for sitting in a tree stand, because I feel guilty. Like, I feel guilty because I should be out running my dog. So I feel like that's going to be the point. Like, if I'm ever going to get back into archery, I think that's going to be that window, that time frame. And that's where I really do want to learn, like, how a compound bow works. Like what is, like how to actually make it run right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this about that too. You know, when I started tinkering with being a bow tech, and I don't really consider myself a bow tech. I'm my own bow tech. I don't set up bows for people. I did for a cousin, but that's because he was my cousin. But, you know, somebody just needed me to take a look at something, make, you know, tie a peep or, you know, do some stuff like that. That's one thing. But anyway, where I was going is the thing about it now is there's some technology in some of these bows where you don't have to know a lot. You know, you can just follow the instructions from the manufacturer and you're going to be able to make that bow shoot better than you would have, say, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. The bows are already different with some of the technology that's in them, you know. And it's sometimes I say to myself, well, why do I have this bow press again? Because the bows, you can make them shoot sometimes without a bow press. You can make them shoot well without a bow press. There are a few things you still need, don't get me wrong, but you know, the average guy in his backyard, if he's got the right bow and the guy at the shop rushed him out of there and set him up and he thinks he's not quite shooting right, you can do a lot with some of these bows in your backyard.
That's awesome. That's really crazy to hear it's coming that far along, where it's more user friendly to work on them, and it's not so I'm going to blow this thing up and hurt myself if I turn the wrong screw. Right, which I'm sure if you turn the wrong screw, still you probably can do something dumb to yourself.
Of course, you still could, but they come a long way to make it easier for the end user to take care of some of the things themselves.
Well, I know looking at some, like, it seems like you can change your own draw length now. Like before, that used to be a huge deal with changing cams and other things, and not like some of the ones that I feel like, unless if I'm completely wrong, but it seems like some of them you're able to just adjust without a bow press now.
That's right. That's right. You can adjust draw lengths without a bow press. You can adjust poundage without a bow press. You can, I think some of the new bows, you can kind of sort of shim them without a bow press. I know the bow I shoot, you can change the cam angles, you know, with the limb pocket adjustments. You can, another manufacturer, they have a crank, basically a drive shaft on the axle of the cam. You can move the cam without a bow press. I mean, you can do a lot. You know, only thing you need a bow press for is like maybe to change the string or make a really gross adjustment. If it's just a tweak, a lot of stuff you can do without a bow press. But anyway, you just need it really to tie a peep or change the strings or some of that.
Sure. That's really cool to hear that it's coming that far. It's really that just opens up more for the people that want to try to do things themselves and learn themselves.
Right, right. Or for somebody, maybe you don't necessarily want to learn it yourself, but the closest bow shop is, you know, 2 or 3 hours away, you know, or right. Something like that, you know. Or you might be in the backcountry on a hunt and you fall and something seems a little off, and you may be able to get it back close just by doing some adjustments in the field, you know?
Sure. Or I know there's plenty of people out there on a budget and they can't afford whatever a bow shop is now, $60, $100 an hour. Labor's not cheap. Where if they can do it themselves and learn and do it right with a little bit less risk, I mean, that opens up, that just provides archery to more people then.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we're right about that hour mark, Dan. I think it's been a great show. It's really been great having you on. I met you through Brian Schiller and part of Pine Ridge Archery.
That's right.
With that, Brian texted me while we're in the show. And if I looked a little distracted, that was why. Pine Ridge Archery is willing to give away a quick stand to the listeners on this episode.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great product. I have two quick stands. I try to get a quick stand for every bow. You know, that's a great little tool. Yeah.
So see if I can make this work. There we go. So there's for the ones watching on Facebook or YouTube, showing a picture of it right now. It's a very cool stand. I'm sure Dan can explain it better than I can if you want, for the ones that are listening.
Yeah, so basically you clip this device onto your lower limb on your bow, and then it allows you to do one of two things. You can lean your bow back on the cam, and this kind of is like a kickstand on a bicycle, right? They call it a quick stand. And then, or if you have a long enough stabilizer on the front, you can tilt your bow forward and kind of prop it up with this stand and the stabilizer to kind of sit your bow up while you're going to retrieve arrows from a target. Or actually, I use it a lot for that, and I use it in the blind. Sometimes I hunt in the ground blind, and you can have the bow sitting on the ground using this stand. And the great thing about the Pine Ridge quick stand is, I don't know if you can tell those two slots that looks like a slotted screw in there, almost at the top, you can adjust the width between those two jaws at the top, depending on how wide your limbs are on your bow. And then also there's a towards on the legs, there's a diagonal slot there with the screw. You can adjust the length of the stand legs to fit, you know, kind of the geometry of your bow. And like I was saying, whether you had a front stabilizer or whatever, however you want to set the bow up, you can adjust those legs to give you the right, you know, the right angle so the bow is stable when you set it up. So this has more adjustability than a lot of stands on the market like this.
That's awesome. And it's, you just, it's super easy to take on and off, obviously, because it just slips over, like slips around that lower limb. I mean, I mean, one and a half seconds, maybe to pick it. I mean, it looks like
right. Yeah, those jaws are kind of spring closed. You can get them, close the legs together to a point where it holds the jaws open, but then there's a little bit of spring tension. Once you get it back on the limb, you kind of start opening those legs up, and then it'll kind of snap around. Not snap, but, you know, kind of move around and clip onto the limbs. The other good thing about Pine Ridge is they offer this in it's like a Crayola crayon box of color options that you can get this thing in, you know. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, all kinds of colors. So
I think the body can come in white as well. I think they have the white plus all those leg colors. There you go.
White with different limb colors. So the winner, in order to be eligible, you got to go on Instagram and follow Pine Ridge Archery, which is Pine Ridge Archer. We'll put a link in the description. You have to follow Paddle and Finn on Instagram, which is Paddle, the letter N, and Finn. And then you're going to have to leave a comment. And Dan, I'm going to let you pick what the word they got to comment. So.
Okay. The word they need to comment is bow hunting for life.
Bow hunting for life it is. So the winner will be selected in 2 weeks from now. Today is March 8th. So we are going to select the winner on the Friday before my next episode airs. So we will select the winner on March 17th of 2023, and we're going to announce it on my show that airs on March 18th of 2023. So you get 2 weeks to listen to my episode and get signed up. And the winner gets to pick their caller as well.
Yeah, I'm sure whoever wins will be really happy with the quick stand.
So I thought that was kind of exciting and kind of nice, the Pine Ridge Archery, to offer that for this show.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I love that product. I use it, you know, in practice, use it in my bow shop, and use it in the woods. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, Dan, I'm going to give these next couple minutes to you and let you thank everybody you want to thank, direct everyone to the social media you want to share, and give this a little bit, give you time to talk.
All right, great. I want to thank Pine Ridge Archery for connecting us together. This has been a great show. I want to thank you, Brad, for having me on. I'd be glad to talk about more hunting anytime, and I may take you up on some duck hunting at some point. And you can follow me on Instagram. My handle is Straightway Outdoors. That's all one word. And then on Twitter, it's Straight, STR, the number 8, Way Outdoors. And then it's just Dan Course on Facebook. But I'm most active on Instagram.
Sure. I feel like most people have kind of went to the Instagram. It's a really great platform just to share pictures and try to stay out of the weeds of the politics of everything else of the other platforms. That's why I like Instagram. I can just browse pictures. I don't even have to read. It's like coloring book.
Yeah. Some guys at work were just asking me today if I was on Facebook or social media. I was like, I'm on there. Yeah. Yeah. I do a lot, but I really like Instagram a lot more. But anyway, it's whatever. Yeah.
It is. And for the listeners out there, I will share all of those links in the description. Make sure to go give Dan a follow. He's got some really great content out there, and you can follow along what he's got going on throughout the year.
Yep. And if you ever have any questions about archery, bow hunting, or anything I'm talking about, posting about, just send me a message or whatever. Just drop a line. I'd be glad to chat about. I love chatting, hunting, and fishing all the time.
It's weird. It's a weird obsession, as my wife calls it, an obsession. I think it's a very good mental space. It's not an obsession.
Yeah, it's kind of a way of life now. You know, it's you know, my wife gives me a hard time. She's like, all you do is think about hunting. It's like, well, not really, but you know, I think about it, but that's not all I think about. It's just one of the things, you know, I just like. It's just who I am.
Right. I mean, it's not all I think about. I do think about work when I'm at work, but I think about hunting a lot.
Right.
Well, Dan, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in. And until next time, everyone, keep chasing that experience.